Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Approaching retirement? The specifics of retirement differ, of course, for everyone. But the broad goal is to have the financial freedom to live your life in comfort. It is increasingly important to have an executable plan that grows and protects your assets. If you have questions about your retirement that you'd like to ask directly to Steve or Justin, they set aside time each day to answer specific questions. You can send them a note. Just click on Contact Steve or Justin on investtalk.com. And now, today's InvestTalk podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of InvestTalk. It is September 13th, 2016. And I appreciate you being with me today. And as you know, our motto is above average investing for the average investor. So one thing that disguises the average investor from one who enjoys more success keeping track of their portfolio mix of assets, we frequently hear from people who are asking about a certain stock. And we learn that that stock makes up a large portion of their wealth. This is a mistake. It's kind of scary to me. No one should have any company making up more than about 5% of their investment portfolio. As soon as it starts getting above 5%, it starts to dominate. It starts to, you know, things could, you up your risk as it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it doesn't mean that you can't get bigger. It just means it's more risky. When we buy a stock for our clients, we use a limit to about 3% of the portfolio, and we usually have about 30 stocks or so. And we may go up to 5%. It may double on its own. Hopefully it does. And if we have a very strong conviction, we'll hold on to it. But, you know, diversification protects your portfolio from any major company-specific disaster. And it happens every so often. You know it does. And it can happen from left field. It doesn't mean, think about the, what was it, the Department of Labor deciding not to use private prison systems anymore. They announced it just one day, and that really crushed all the private prison companies. And that had nothing to do with the companies themselves. Things just happen. So just be aware. Now, another issue that it worries me is people buying too much of their own company's stock. I mean, they get it at a discount, which is great. It's commission-free. That's great. And it can be a great option. I'm not even complaining about that. It's the overexposure I worry about. Too much of one thing. And the one that strikes me as the most obvious was the Enron debacle a number of years ago, in which all the employees had stocks in their 401k of their company, and Enron went out of business in a really short order of time, and they lost all their money, their retirement money. Stay diversified. Never had 20% or more in any one sector either. Be diversified not only by stocks, but by sectors as well. Again, it's about managing the risk. Think about the financial sector in 2008, how it just collapsed. Okay, those are just some examples of what can happen to you. And that's why you diversify over stocks and sectors. Now, do you have a question about diversification? You can check in right now or anytime with any money question you have. 888-99-CHART is our number. We'll try to answer your question on the very next InvestTalk.
This is Chris in Mississippi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple questions. First is, can you tell me where you can find 5-year average PE ratio? And also, I'd like your thoughts on TJX, what you think might be a good point to get in on that. Could be a good thing to look at. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, I buy it. I buy the 5-year, excuse me, I buy the information, 5-year PE range, not the 5-year PE ratio, but the range from low to high. I buy the data. But I do believe it's out there somewhere, and I want to say maybe Yahoo Finance. I don't remember. I think someone called up months and months ago and told me it was somewhere, and I just don't remember it. TJ Maxx Company, it operates 3,614 off-price apparel and Home Goods stores with plans to open another 130 more in 2016 and 2017. I'm taking a look at the numbers. They have good, solid earnings. Earnings of $3.49 next year after $3.33 this year. That's 5% increase. And then it's scheduled to even increase more at 9% for 2018. Sales are strong, a growth at 5 to 10% every quarter, which is good. But the PE is not cheap. It's a $74.31 stock. You're going to have to pay up for that good numbers. Debt is not too high, good cash flow. It's a well-run company. And in recently it's been selling off from $83 down to $74. So it looks like this might be an opportunity for you to pick it up, but it's still not cheap. The 5-year PE range is 15 to 24, and it's right now at 22. So next year it will be, if it's nothing changes, it'll be around 20. So it's not that inexpensive. It's kind of on the expensive side. And again, you pay up for well-run managed companies, and this is one of them. Okay, TJX is the simple TJX companies. Let's also try to answer a question sent to us via text message. I was wondering what you guys think of MGT Capital Investments. MGT is the symbol as well. So let's see what we have. MGT, type it over there. MGT, and type it over there. Let's see if we can get it up. Okay, John McAfee is talking a big game for it, as he usually does. So some guy named John McAfee is talking it up. They are getting ready to release a new data sharing program. What do you think? Okay. MGT Capital Investment engaged in acquiring, developing, and monetizing assets in the online and mobile gaming space. Okay, look at the numbers. Sales are not very good. Their earnings have been going down for 2 years in a row. They've not made money. It's an $89 company. Why would you even consider buying this company? It hasn't made a dime. It was at 25 cents in May, and now it's at $3.47. Some kind of big announcement. It's a story stock. A story. It was up 5% today. But you wouldn't get me to buy this with monopoly money. Why? It doesn't make any money. It has virtually no sales. There's MGT Capital Investment is, to me, it's not even a business. No. Don't listen to people talking up stuff. Maybe they own shares and they want to talk it up so they can sell it to you as you bid up the price. Don't. Don't buy stocks that don't make money. It's as simple as that. I've said that over and over and over and over. Do not buy stocks that don't make money. Why? Why would you? It's a story. Someone's telling you a good story, but it's not a company. When the stock market looks scary and bonds are stingy, many investors looking for something different come across real estate investment trusts, REITs. But then the options can be confusing. Getting REITs right, REITs, real estate investment trusts, that's going to be one of our main talking points today. Also, did you know that where debt ceiling's coming up again? Next year. I haven't talked about debt ceiling of the government in a long time. What's that going to mean for investors? 30-year treasury yield spike today. In other words, the bonds went down in value. The yields went up. Does it mean anything? Why is that happening? And do you know who Mohammed Al-Arian is? He used to be the co-manager of PIMCO Investments, but a very well-respected person. What is he saying about the recent sell-off? Recent meaning the last 3 days. Two of the last 3 days are pretty good down one. It's really interesting how the volatility all of a sudden spiked on Friday. Spiked down, then up yesterday. Spike up pretty good, then spiked down again. Lost all yesterday, spike up. What's going on with the volatility all of a sudden? Might have more to do with bonds. And Mohammed Al-Arian warns about the sell-off because he is a bond expert. So we're going to discuss what he has to say. And you might not find it interesting, but it is interesting and it is impactful on the market. And that's what's important. Now, each month, you know, I set aside time to review retirement portfolios on Skype and telephone with listeners. I do it every month. Also, I plan my face-to-face meetings in the Bay Area pretty regularly. Coming up in San Francisco on September 20th, and then San Ramon on the 27th, and San Jose on the 28th. 20th, 27th, 28th. So schedule your hour if you want to sit down with me, meet with me, go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to Karen in San Jose. How you doing, Karen?
Hey, I'm doing great, Steve. I'm actually from New Jersey and visiting San Jose now, so glad to be able to talk to you live.
Great.
Thank you. My question is it okay to just not accept a lump sum distribution on a pension so that I have the comfort of knowing I'll have money till I die?
Yes, it's okay to do that. What you do is that you do the math. How much is a lump sum, Karen? And then figure out how much that lump sum can produce. And then how much in the monthly payment are you getting if you take it, you know, by the whatever. I don't know how they're doing it in your case. But usually they pay you a monthly sum every month.
Right. Yeah.
And then figure out, well, is that equal, more than, less than if I took the lump sum and invested in a well-diversified income-producing portfolio? For instance, you know, my income portfolio right now that I do for people pays about 4% dividend yield and has been going up. Mm-hmm. It's up, you know, nicely every year except 2008. But you have the security of that monthly payment if you don't take the lump sum. Now remember, it's usually an insurance company that's guaranteeing that monthly payment. So it depends on how it's structured, Karen, but yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Don't think it's wrong. It's not. Okay?
Okay.
Just do thank you for the call. Just do the math. Make sure it works out that, you know, they're not ripping you off. That's what I always worry about. And thank you for calling. And I lived in New Jersey for 8-9 years while I commuted to New York City when I first got out of college. So I know New Jersey pretty well. You know, they call New Jersey the Garden State. And you know what? It's very pretty. It has a bun wrap about it not being very pretty. And it's not. It's spectacularly pretty. It does have certain areas along the coast or near the river, Hudson River, that are industrial and don't look so good. But interior, very, very, very nice. Mark, Northern California. How you doing, Mark?
Northern California. Hey, Steve. How you doing? Great show.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about, I don't know how you pronounce it, PayX, PAYX.
Okay. Is it a company you're interested in?
Friday. Yeah, I want to buy it. It looks like it's at support now, but I think Friday it had a high volume down day, and I'm not sure how to interpret that.
Yeah, it did. It had a pretty big volume down day today, too. And a pretty decent up day volume yesterday. The volume was up yesterday and the stock was up. So it's had, you know, it's been like the stock market. And it's Paychex is who it is. PAYX is Paychex, Inc., provider of payroll, human resources. Paychex does very, very well when the economy is rolling and they do a lot of payroll because everybody's working. You know, they have a lot of cash flow, and they do poorly. They're a cyclical company. They do poorly in economic slumps. Well, Paychex has been moving up nicely. Now it's just in the recent last 3 or 4 days pulling back, hit some resistance, and then came back down.
Okay, so let me just interject. So I think the numbers are pretty darn good. The news today that I read the paper, some kind of overtime issue, state law, whatever, in California. So it's a, you know, they handle that payroll stuff, and overtime's always a mess. And I think also wages went up recently, didn't they? Was that today on the news, yesterday?
Well, it wouldn't affect them, wages going up necessarily or down. It's more of how many people are on their system. And just so you know, it's overpriced. It has a pretty high PE of a $58 stock and going to make $2.21 next year. So it's a little pricey. That's probably a worrisome point for me. You listen to Invest Talk. 888-992-4278. Let's talk about REITs, everybody. REITs, Real Estate Investment Trusts. I think most people know what real estate investment trusts are. And those are investments based on real estate, okay? These are companies that buy, sell, mortgage real estate. They're in the real estate business in some way, shape, or fashion. Many of them buy a certain kind of real estate, like apartment buildings or warehouses or malls, okay? There's very health operations or hospitals. There's a lot of them, and recently they've gotten so significant that they are now have their own sector. It's a real estate investment trust sector. So it is a very valid way to try to make some income through real estate without you buying, having to spend billions and millions of dollars buying your own real estate. It's also very liquid, which is all good things for someone who is in retirement and don't want to manage your own real estate. So these are really solid investments. And just like any other investments, they can become undervalued and overvalued. So you have to treat them like any other stock in trying to evaluate them. So ordinary investors can now do it. You can buy this. You know, with the advent of ETFs, exchange-traded funds, which is, and REITs, the investor can invest almost in anything that was impossible not that many years ago. You know, you can buy currencies, you can buy commodities, you can buy real estate, all through the market these days. And REITs are very, very solid dividend-paying asset. Now, there's also private REITs out there. We're not talking about that. We're talking about public REITs. Public REITs are there's a lot more protections in public REITs because it's all public information that has to be divulged. Private REITs generally are not. You don't have the protections that you have in public REITs. So be very, very careful. There's 18 different categories, by the way. I didn't know if you knew that in the REIT space. So, and don't think they're all owned properties. No, they could be mortgages. They could be just lending to real estate and own trust deeds. Those are REITs too. That could be REITs anyways. REITs, I like them. I don't know if I want to buy them right this minute, but I do like them. 888-99-CHART. Let's go talk to Nick and Hayward. How you doing, Nick?
Hi, Steve. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Wonderful program. I enjoy it.
Thank you.
My question is, can you tell me your pros and cons on preferred stocks, buying preferred stocks for income?
Well, preferred stocks, everybody. He's saying, what are the pros and cons of preferreds? Preferreds are kind of a hybrid between a stock and a bond. They're usually issued by companies, usually bigger companies, and it's a stock that pays a set interest rate, Nick. So it pays like a bond, just like a bond. Okay? And so you earn that income. It's different than a dividend because a preferred is higher up on the scale of assets when it comes to a bankruptcy. The bond, if a company goes bankrupt, bond holders get paid first, preferred holders get paid second, and stockholders get paid third. So it's a little bit safer than a stock. So the con is they don't move up like the stock. They don't move up, and plus they don't move down like a stock either. They're pretty liquid. Another con is many times that can be called. You know what called means? That means the bond issuer.
They can pay you off. Right?
Yes, they can pay you off and take it back. And so you love it because you get 9%, let's say, and they decide, oh, that's too much. We're going to pay them off and take it back and issue something else. Yeah, so you get now, all disappointed.
Is that known beforehand, or they have a right to do it anytime?
Yes, there's a callable portion of many of those things, and they say, this bond is callable in 2 years. So you get like 2 years of not being callable, and then after that time, they can decide to call it or not. You have to find out what that is. you know, before you buy it.
Okay.
Okay, Nick?
Okay.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go to Art, Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, I just had a question on when you have a rollover from your 401k into like your IRA,
uh-huh.
Is it normal to have a fee charged by Vanguard or
the company
holding your money?
Yeah, the company is where the money's coming from. Well, they can or cannot charge you. I mean, I've seen it quite often these days where they're charging like $30 when it costs them virtually nothing to do, which kind of is. But the company, not where it's going, but where it's coming from.
Yeah, I was just wondering because I pulled out probably close to 90% of my 401, and it seems like what I left behind, they took it out of that.
Yeah, they'll take it. Sorry about that. Thanks, Art. Appreciate the call. We're open to your money questions. 888-99-CHART. Give me a call.
We'll continue now with InvestTalk, and we thank you for subscribing to our podcast. There are other ways that InvestTalk can be of service to you. One is our InvestTalk Insider program, and when you enlist, you have instant access to a library of information about finance and investing, from webinars to easy-to-read info sheets. It's 100% free, and you can sign up right now on investtalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. And now, more InvestTalk. You're listening to InvestTalk for Tuesday, September 13th. ETFs can be an excellent investment tool to help assist any trustee achieve the trust's goals. Creating a trust fund with ETFs. That's next time. But what about right now? 888-99-CHART is how to reach us with your question from anywhere in the U.S.
888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to BJ in Fremont. How are you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
My question related to what you just said about REIT and real estate REIT especially. So what do you suggest that if somebody has to buy a rental property versus having invested in the REITs? Because on one side, you don't have to have the headache of managing the tenants.
Right.
And what is the net-net, return differentiation you will experience into investments?
Well, REITs are long-term have been, so far, been pretty good. They don't have as long-term track record as other assets, but they do have pretty good track record. They remember, they are required to pay 90% of their income in the form of a dividend to you, the shareholder. So you got that return, and that usually is 3 to 7%. If it's higher than that, I get a little bit suspicious in this market. But also the values generally go up if it's a well-managed REIT. So therefore the stock generally goes up over long periods of time. For instance, Realty Income Corp, which is one of the largest REITs, a $16 billion company. The symbol is O. In 2009, 2008, they got as low as like $14 a share, and today it's at 63. So over long periods of time, you not only get the income, but you also get the appreciation, but they also could go down in value if they're poorly ran. So it's just like you buying a piece of property. It's where they are and how good you're managing the property and all those other things. But the headache is not yours. It's the manager of the REIT who has the headache. I kind of like them that way.
So do you recommend a REIT over managing the rental property?
Well, I had properties myself for years and years and years, and I got tired of managing it. So it depends on you. If you want to manage properties yourself and you have the assets, you probably can do pretty well. You know, it's your headache versus somebody else's headache. And that's kind of a personal decision on you. I like real estate. I think it's a good investment for people, a good diversification for people. So don't, you know, I have no issues with you buying real estate and managing, you know, rental properties. I don't have a problem with that. You just got to kind of know what you're doing. BJ, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Andre in Chico. How you doing, Andre?
Great. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I want to kind of shift gears to the bond market really quick. I don't see a lot of upside going forward. I mean, the only place rates seem to be able to go are up unless we go negative. So I wanted to get your thoughts just on somebody like myself who has probably a 60-40 mix, 60 bonds right now, mostly in short-term, ultra-short-term.
Okay.
I'm getting killed in long-term ETFs and intermediate right now. I'm not an expert. Just kind of have it allocated as such from a few months ago. And just wanted to get your views going into the future, specific to ETFs, if you could.
Yeah, I have, you know, I don't like the bond funds other than to hide from the market on a shorter end of the spectrum, very short. Long-term and intermediate bonds, it's hard to imagine, as you pointed out, it's hard to imagine that you're going to get much of any upside appreciation at all. I don't think you're going to. Over the next 10, 20, 30 years, I don't see it. I see the interest rates slowly creeping up, but not fast. So it's not like you should get killed, but I mean, bonds have gone up. The rates have spiked. 30-year treasury rates have spiked in the last today, and the bonds got hurt today. And I think that's going to be more of the norm going forward. But, you know, I have been wrong on bonds for the last couple, three, 4 years because I don't think it's a good place to be. And the bonds got lower and lower and lower. The yields got lower and lower. The bond value still went up. But I still think the risk is way too high. So if you're going to hold bonds, I would hold the actual bonds themselves and ladder them in a short ladder.
Right.
And that way you get your money back, you know, when it matures at par. So that's what I would do.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Andre. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Let's go to Cherie in Fremont. How are you doing, Cherie? Oh, Cherie's gone. Sorry about that, Cherie. The debt ceiling's coming back next year, everybody. Remember the debt ceiling and all the angst about, you know, whether we're going to spend the money or shut down the government, all that stuff? Well, it's coming back. That worry for the market's coming back in March. We have a debt ceiling of about $20 trillion. And as soon as it comes back, because it's been suspended, the whole debt ceiling thing has been suspended since 2015. But next year, in March, it starts back up again, and the ceiling is $20 trillion, and it's going to start back up right near where the ceiling is. You as investors have to deal with that. What kind of angst is it going to cause the stock market or the bond market? What kind of is it going to affect the dollar? I think the dollar might be affected in a negative way. I don't know, but I just want you to realize that it is coming back to haunt us. So just be careful. Just think about what's going to happen when the government starts fighting over the debt ceiling again. As you as an investor, what investments are going to get hurt? What are going to be fine? That kind of thing. And no, I don't think I ever reviewed what the market did today. The Dow was down 258 points. The Nasdaq down 57. And the S&P down 32. So it gave back almost all of its gains yesterday. What we got here is we have a big down day on Friday, right? Big down day on Friday. What was it? The Dow was down 398 points or something like that. Then it made up about 250 or so yesterday, and then it gave all that back today. So we're back to where it was down on Friday, just about. So we've had 3 days of a lot of activity and volume pretty high, but volume didn't spike. There's not a lot of fear in the market as I look at the volume. The volume did go up, but there's no spike in volume, which is where you see, you know, the fear coming into the market. So you don't see that yet. Remember, we had 2 months of virtually no volatility, just flat. Now, 3 days, we've had some pretty decent volatility. And all that was because of the ECB, I think. I think it's the ECB is what you got to look at. What is your risk number? I'll explain that when we come back, by the way, the ECB. What is your risk number? If you take our simple test, you can know in a moment, just a couple of minutes, just how much risk you feel comfortable with. And you get a number, so it's a risk number, and it's from 0 to 100, where 80 is the market, the S&P 500. So how much risk are you comfortable with taking? That'll help you plan. That number will help you plan your future. So if you want to capture your risk tolerance and see if your portfolio fits that same number, because we could put the portfolio in and come up with a number also. And then you can compare what risk you are comfortable taking and are you taking that risk. It's free and it's easy and it's right there on investtalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab.
Getting ready to make some important decisions about your home? Well, now you have another source of helpful ideas from our own licensed realtor, Justin Klein. To get a note to him with your question or comment, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin, and he'll get right back to you.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Bobby from Atlanta, Georgia, podcast listener. What's your take on AGCO? And overall, what's your take on the agricultural industry, like John Deere and this one? Looks like the industry is weak. So do you think it's a good time to buy AGCO, or shall I still wait for a further correction? Thank you. Bye.
I think the whole sector of commodities and agriculture, I think they're getting close to bottoming out. I think we've seen the bottom in them. Now, AGCO Corp, manufactures agricultural tractors, self-propelled sprayers, and combines for the agricultural equipment industry. They're going to make $2.31 this year after making $3.24 last year, and the year before $4.70, and in 2016 they made $6 a share. So you can see it's coming way down to $2.31, and of course the stock also fell during that period. I mean, it was a high of 59, low 60s in 2013. 57 was a high last year. Today it's, and what, 46? Now, they're going to make $2.31 this year and then up to $2.51 in 2017. So I think we may have seen a bottom. Their sales have been falling, but all of a sudden, this most recent quarter, they only fell 4% versus 15, 20, 25% in the quarters before that. So it's a $3.7 billion company. It does, it's trading 1.3 times book value, and not too much debt. Management owns 16%, which is very good. And mutual fund buyers have been slightly selling off the last year. So the problems you have a return on equity of 9%. It's pretty low. You have a P/E ratio of 18. It's a $46 stock, and it's going to make $2.50. So that means it's the P/E ratio is going to be still around 18, and that's not a cheap P/E. The cheap P/E for this company is 7. That's what the low has been in the last 5 years, 7 to 21. So it's kind of on the high end of the P/E, so I would not buy it here. Still might be a bit too expensive. I do think it's getting, it's flumping around the low. And I think it could get into your low 40s and then you could buy it there. But I don't know if I'd buy it here at 46. But I do think it's probably near its bottom. I do. Let's talk about the 30-year Treasury yields that spiked today. I just touched on them. And the reason why I think they spiked is because the ECB, European Central Bank, met last week and decided to do nothing when everybody thought they would ease more because the European Union is still, it's almost fallen into recession. It's not, but it's awful close. In some countries, they are. So since they did nothing, the treasuries, our treasuries yields went up, and therefore the bond values went down. And there's been speculation is that the central banks want the spread between the short-term and the long-term bonds to expand, because when the spread expands, that is historically an indication of a healthy economy. But I can't say that when we know that the central banks are trying to manipulate it. It's a sign of a healthy economy in a normal bond market. We don't have a normal bond market. We have a bunch of central banks interfering all over the place. So what is the spread supposed to be? What it would be normally be if the governments weren't interfering, the central banks in the various countries weren't interfering. So it's almost, it used to be a pretty reliable indicator, the spread between short-term and long-term interest rates. And if the spread was increasing, that means the economy was healthy. And that's what's happening right now. But I can't say that as a long-term indicator. I don't think we can use it anymore. Not until the feds and the central banks around the world get out of the manipulating currency and manipulating bond prices. They got to get out of that business before you can say, okay, let's go back and see if what the spread isn't meaningful or not. So just can't do it. Now, I also want to talk about Mohammed Al-Aran as he warns about the sell-off. So he's going to be something we need to talk about before the end of the show. Let's take the next text question from Anderson in Daly City. Hi, guys. Love the show. My question is, what does it mean when analysts set a price target increase? For example, Goldman Sachs recently increased Restoration Hardware stock to $45. What does that mean? Now, first of all, let me tell you that we own Restoration Hardware in our managed account. When analysts, okay, first of all, try to remember what I've always said about analysts, that they're always wrong, okay? Now, when analysts set a price target, they're telling you how much they think it's worth, and they think it's going to go there. That's really basically what they're doing. They're saying Restoration Hardware, we think it's worth $45. Okay, that's apparently what Goldman Sachs is. The stock is selling for $35.76. So they're telling you they think it's going to go up. That's what they're telling you. Are they going to be right? Well, analysts said that the internet was going to always mean that the dot-com stocks would go up. That didn't happen. Analysts also were very bullish on banks when they started to collapse. Analysts are always wrong. It's a degree. And what direction? You don't know. But they're just guessing. And what are they basing on? Well, they base it on the same things I'm basing on. What is the projected earnings? What do you think the profit margin is? What is their different factors? All those different factors, return on equity, return on assets, you name it, they look at it. And so do we. So do I. So they come up with a price target. Now, I think that Restoration Hardware is probably worth about $40 myself. They're at $45. But, who knows if we're right? I can see $45 why they use that, because that's where there's a lot of resistance coming into the stock. We'll see. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and I'm here for you. Let's walk through this together. I'll try to answer any money questions you have. Just call 888-99-CHART, and we'll talk about it. We're going to talk to Dan in San Diego. How are you doing, Dan?
Good, Steve. Hope you're doing good.
I am. Thank you.
I was wondering, does it look like now is the time to pick to take a position in Hecla?
Hecla Mining Company, HL is the symbol. Engaged in mining and development of gold, silver, zinc, lead properties in the United States and Mexico. It is $2 billion company selling for $5.40. We own this company in our managed account. We've owned it for close to, a year? About a year, I guess. And it looks like it slowed way down about a month ago, and now we got about $7 a share. Now it's at $5.40.
Right.
And in January, it was down $1.50, so that's how far it's gone up. And I think so, Dan. My personal belief, I don't like gold personally. I'm not a big gold person, and yet I have quite a few gold positions right now because I think there's an opportunity here in gold. If the dollar weakens, gold's going to go up. So the question, reason why this started to fail, well, I don't want to say fail. The reason why this started to go down is because everybody was thinking the Fed might be raising rates.
In September.
Yeah. And now all of a sudden doesn't look like they're going to raise rates to me. I don't think so. And now the question is, will the dollar go up or down? And then last week you had the ECB saying, oh, we're not going to ease anymore. Not right now, anyways. Go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry.
I've got some kind of feedback, so I'm going to listen to Dan's speaker, Steve.
Okay, no problem. So if the ECB is hesitant about easing their money, that means their currency, the euro, might start to gain a little strength. But on the other hand, their economies are doing poor there. See, there's all this tug and war because the gold goes up if the dollar goes down. The gold goes up if there's a lot of excess worry out there, you know, and wars and such. Gold goes up if there's inflation. We don't have any inflation anywhere, not here in the United States anyway. So what is the driver of the gold right now? I think the biggest driver is the dollar. What will happen with the dollar? Now, if the Fed is not going to continue increasing rates, the dollar will probably weaken. If the economy, the U.S. economy starts to slow down, that would be bullish for gold. So it's one of those things. It's, you know, it's a big tug of war going on here. But I do think we're going to, I still think that the gold has one more run in it up. We'll see. HL, that's Hecla Mining Company. 888-99-CHART. Mohammed Al Aran used to be the co-manager of PIMCO, the big, huge, worldwide, biggest, and most successful bond mutual fund company. And he's been talking lately, and he says he thinks the market's probably going to sell off without a turnaround in corporate earnings. Now, we've had six quarters in a row with corporate earnings going down, and this quarter is scheduled to go down another 2% for the S&P 500. So it hasn't turned around yet. He's saying that though it's been keeping the market up is the liquidity by central banks, and that cannot last forever. That's going to stop at some point. But if you remember right, last year there was huge buybacks by companies that also helped keep stock prices up. Last year was not a good year for the market. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't good. So we have, he's concerned that unless we get that turnaround of earnings, and we're not seeing it yet, that the stock prices are going to weaken. Now remember, he's a bond expert. So he's talking about, he thinks bonds are going to weaken. Yields are going to go up. That's what he thinks. And that means bond, you know, stock prices, in his opinion, would go down because they don't have the E, the earnings, to support them. That's what he thinks. We have to wind up our hour. Remember, your questions help keep us on track, addressing money issues you want to talk about, not me. And you ask them anytime you want, day or night, using our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. And we do this every weekday, so see you tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors,
Call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.